Hey, and welcome to That's My Perth Pod, King of the Hill podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Man, we are getting to the end of the year. Anything interesting happening to you late anytime soon? I know we have Christmas and all the holidays related to that coming up, and New Year's and Kwanzaa and whatnot. Anything of interest coming up for you?
Okay, so my friend is getting married. Shout out to Blake if you're listening. At the end of this year, but also Blake, turn off the thing because I don't want you to hear what's about to say. I'm actually going to be his best man at his wedding, which I've known about for a while. But I kind of been procrastinating on getting a suit to wear to the wedding. They asked everyone to wear a black, you know, black on black suit and pants. Well, my suit is blue, so it's not going to work. So I need to get a black suit. And every week, and I'm like, I'm going to go to Men's Warehouse or JCPenney's and like pick up a jacket. And I just, every weekend's really been busy for a while. Oh, busy, and I've been procrastinating. But hey, we're almost at the end of the year and I don't have a suit jacket. So I was like, I'm going to order it off of Amazon. I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to order one off of Amazon. So I ordered it and it came in. What was that?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I think, yes, judge me. But it came in and I was trying it on and it's a little big on me. Like, I was like, this suit's a little big. So I'm like, can I get this tailored? Can you get big things tailored to you? Can they remove fabric from it and make it smaller?
Yes, you can. It's easier to go down in size versus up. So they can remove fabric and restitch it or whatever.
Well, that's okay. Well, I've been looking for, I guess, a tailor. I found a couple. The other problem was I did not check what the material was like the suit was made out of. And in my mind, I think suits are made out of the same material, like a cotton polyester, like some kind of blend. You know how suits are kind of shiny in a sense? Like,
yeah, I guess so.
They're not like flat looking. They kind of have like a gloss feel. I don't know. That's just in my mind. I always think, well, I ended up buying a suit made out of wool. I didn't know that was a thing until I received it in the mail.
Wow, I did not think that. I don't think I've even had a wool suit.
Well, I was talking to my friend who lives in Indiana, and he was like, oh, a wool suit. I guess that's like a common thing, but like it's not for weddings. So I did order a new suit because I was like, this brand is pretty good. Like, I like the way the suit's designed. I just don't like the material. So I went on and I found the right material I wanted. But I'm not returning the wool one yet, just in case something happens and I don't receive the other one. Because now I don't want to have no options, you know?
Yeah.
So
I can see that.
Yep. That's my little like mini crisis. I think my resolution for next year is to not procrastinate on anything. I'm just going to try to be on top of everything all the time. So this never happens again.
Not a bad idea, to be honest.
Yep. So that's kind of what's happening in my life this past couple of weeks. But what have you been up to?
Not a lot, to be honest. Everything kind of slowing down just for the end of the year, which is kind of nice. It is nice to have kind of this down period for a month or whatever. It kind of gets boring, but it's also just nice that it's not having to do a ton. I think this week we're full of holiday parties, which is going to be interesting. We're not doing a pre-COVID. We would have like a massive holiday party that just all the stops and whatever. I think since COVID, we've kind of scaled back and we still have holiday parties, but it's way like one that's individualized. So it's like by team or whatever, or by org instead of like the entire company or whatever. And then it's like small. It's like, oh, going to get a dinner or something, which, you know, free dinner is still a good thing. Don't get me wrong. But it's also like, eh, it's, you know, it's not as grandiose, but you know what? I'll take it. We do, but yeah, we do have a few holiday parties this week, so that's what I'm going to do. And then, you know, I think everything's going to start to slow down in a week or two with New Year's and Christmas. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting time. Hmm.
Do you have, so I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, we're already way into December, but do you have like Christmas movies or winter movies? Like movies you're like, I have to watch them during this time of year.
I used to when I was way younger. And you know what? There might be an argument for me to go back to it and start doing that again, just for nostalgia's sake. But yeah, back when I was younger, you know, we always watched like Jingle All the Way and Santa Claus and stuff. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but I have not done it in many, many years. But you know, I have like most of the streaming services. I have no reason not to.
There are two things that I always watch on Christmas, and I don't know when I started it, but it's been a long time. One is I always watch Gremlins, which I think is the best Christmas movie ever.
Okay.
And then second, I watch the Alf Christmas special. And like, I'm obsessed with Alf. I'm not like, well, I'm obsessed with Alf like privately. I don't go about screaming and preaching the word of Alf, but I do like to watch Alf episodes when I'm bored. But the Alf Christmas special is really like funny. So I like to watch that. So those are my Christmas traditions. But I just added a new one because I've been wanting to watch something Marvel related. And I just threw on Hawkeye because I forgot Hawkeye happens during Christmas. And it's a pretty fun watch this time of year because it's like a Christmas story kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like it's maybe not as much. But I feel like it's the same, not issue, but so you know how people would always say Die Hard to Christmas movie and stuff because it happens to take place during Christmas. However, Christmas really isn't that important to the plot. Like there's nothing about Santa Claus or anything like that. It just happens to take place during a Christmas party. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like Hawkeye might fall into that vein because technically, like, it does happen around Christmas time, and like the final scenes are in Rockefeller Plaza with the Christmas tree and stuff. But like, was Christmas, and it's been about a year since I've seen it, but was Christmas actually important to the plot?
Well, the subplot is that he's trying to make it home in time for Christmas to his family. Okay. So every episode it's like, today was supposed to be gingerbread making day, and today was supposed to be Christmas movie marathon day. And today is supposed to be Ugly Christmas Sweater Day. Like, there's this kind of like, I need to get home by Christmas kind of subplot line in the background of kind of the action. You know, I have a theory on like Gremlins is my favorite Christmas movie. But it's not really like, people will be like, oh, well, that's kind of like horror comedy. Not really Christmas. I know Christmas has become its kind of own theme. But my argument is, it has a lot of Christmas elements in it that I consider a Christmas movie. Like, Die Hard doesn't have a lot of Christmassy in it. Even though, like, it takes place on Christmas, there's not a lot of, like, Christmassy elements in it. And Gremlins, the lead female, her dad died in the chimney because he was dressed like Santa on Christmas. Like, it's very Christmas heavy. So.
Okay. I'll give you that. Yeah, because Die Hard doesn't really have much. It just happens to take place during Christmas, and like the whole set piece is the fact that it is Christmas, or it's like a Christmas party at that business, then it happens to be taken over. But yeah, Christmas is really irrelevant. It could have just as easily been like a summer party or a Memorial Day party or something, and the movie would have pretty much played out the same way. But yeah, if you take away like Santa elements and stuff like that, then it definitely changes those other movies.
Yeah, like I do think Home Alone is a Christmas movie because like he needed the like, didn't he? I don't know. I haven't seen Home Alone in a while, but does he need to make things out of the presents, like traps out of the presents and stuff like that? Or
I think so, if I remember correctly.
I feel like Christmas was a really big part of Home Alone. So I'm like, Home Alone is a Christmas movie.
Gosh, yeah. Home Alone is weird. Home, like that, there's always, if you look at these movies as adults that you used to love as kids, they actually seem kind of weird. Like, what was it? Home Alone 2, when you're a kid, what is it? The guy that Tim Curry plays, you think, oh, he's the bad guy. And, oh, yeah, Kevin gave it to him and all that stuff. But when you're an adult, you realize, dude, Kevin's like a minor by himself, and he's committing like wire fraud or identity theft by buying stuff on his dad's credit card. And this dude's just kind of doing his job, making sure that that theft isn't happening and that this kid's all right. But we're like, ah, he's such a jerk.
This is very true. Yeah. Well, Kevin is the worst. Mm-hmm. But have you seen, it just came out, but have you seen Violent Night?
I have not, but it is on my list of movies to see.
Oh my gosh. It's such a fun watch. I think I'm recommending everyone to watch Violent Night. If you can't see in theaters, I hear it's going to be on demand by Christmas time. So hopefully you can see it. But of course, there's Santa Claus in it. This has my favorite list, like Santa Claus list, you know? You know how sometimes he pulls out mm-hmm. a paper and it's like the naughty and nice list? This one feels so mm-hmm. modern and so updated that I really like this Santa Claus. But there's a scene where there are booby traps, like Home Alone-ish style, but it's more realistic, like how they would act in real life if like you got hit in the head with a bowling ball, like what damage it would do to you in real life.
Oh yeah, the wet bandits in Home Alone should absolutely be Marvel characters or something, because they clearly have some kind of healing factor, the way they're able to just bounce back from all those injuries.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I feel like I need to watch Home Alone, even though it's just like, I watched it as a kid, I just never was like, loved it as much as other people love it.
The first two are all right. So Home Alone and Home Alone 2 Lost in New York. The subsequent, I want to say 4. I know they made a Home Alone 3, a Home Alone 4. I'm pretty sure they made a Home Alone 5. And then the Disney did, like, what is it? Home Sweet Home Alone last year. Though that might have been Home Alone 5. It's either Home Alone or Home Alone. Either Home Alone 5 or Home Alone 6. But yeah, the quality definitely dropped after the first one. After the first two, that is.
I don't know. If someone was like, I need you to pen a Home Alone 6-7 script, would you be like, I got this? Or are you like, maybe we should just let this die?
I would be like, maybe we should let this die. Because the first ones were classics. Why do we need another one where a kid... And also, I feel like it won't work anymore. Like, nowadays. Because think about it. Back then, okay, cool. Yeah, that there was no cell phones or anything. I think the problem would have been solved immediately had it been made today.
Wow, now it feels scary, though. Like, isn't it just like a home invasion? Like,
pretty much.
With the band? I don't know now. Now I'm like, maybe we need to fuse Home Alone and Panic Room. Like, someone left Jodie Foster Home Alone on Christmas.
Yeah.
We forgot Jodie Foster.
Well, you know, there's a fan theory out there that Kevin grows up to be Jigsaw from the Saw movies. So if you look at it that way, then it is a pretty dark movie if they happen to be in the same universe. Granted, there's no way that it happens because the times just don't align for, because Jigsaw's like an old man, or at the very least, like late middle-aged, and Kevin's a little kid, so like, in the movies, the Saw movies look like they took place in the 2000s. So either they're two different people or Kevin had a really, really tough teenage years.
Yeah, like what if someone's like, Jigsaw, you're like 60, 70. Like, why are you doing this? He's like, I'm only 32.
That would be funny. Like, that'd be a funny plot twist in the next Saw, that just Jigsaw was really only like 27 or something.
Dude, he's just an old man. He's like, I'm not an old man. I can't even buy liquor yet. I'm 20. My parents left me home alone one Christmas. Yes. And then forgot me another Christmas.
Yep. And that just caused so much stress and trauma that I aged prematurely.
Oh, man. Maybe there is. You know what? Maybe you should write the next. I feel like you got an idea now.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I feel like Hank would do a great job on Home Alone. Like, if it were a real thing, just because of all of his, like, his tool knowledge and building stuff. Granted, I think he'd have a hard time misusing tools. Like, dropping a toolbox on a guy's head or whatever, I think that would be, like, his mind wouldn't allow him to misuse a tool like that.
I don't know. I don't think Bobby would survive.
No, Bobby's not that smart, but you never know. He might pull it off. Mm. But while we're talking about King of the Hill, let's jump into Queasy Rider, Season 7, Episode 13. So, about halfway through the series. This one is actually one of my favorites that my cousin and I would always watch. Because it's just, you know, I think it's something we both kind of relate to. There was a point in time where I think both of us wanted motorcycles, and so that's kind of why we relate to it. And but yeah, it's a fun episode. So it starts off at the alley, and Boomhauer's coming up, and you know, Hank's kind of questioned, "Oh, hey, Boomhauer, how was your trip to Houston?" And he's like, "Oh, you know, it's all right," but you know, in his Boomhauer way, and he's kind of alluding to the fact that he went to a conference. And they call him a liar, and they show a Houston, Texas bobblehead. And Hank's like, if you're going to sneak around on the Cowboys, don't ask a Cowboy fan to get your mail. So I guess it kind of hints that Hank opened his mail, and that's how he found the bobblehead. But anyway, Hank's just like, you know, Boomer, just because the Cowboys are having a bad season or two or five doesn't mean you should start rooting for somebody else. And then Dale's like, although just because we root for the Texans doesn't mean we have to stop rooting for the Cowboys. And Hank is like, well, they are different conferences, so the only time they'd ever play each other is in the Super Bowl, an all-Texas Super Bowl. His will be done.
I mean, okay, I'm not a big football fan, but when Hank said that, I was like, that would be really awesome. Like, I don't know. I would have to try my best to, like, go to that Super Bowl. That would be amazing. Mm-hmm. Texas would freak out everyone.
Yeah, I think, granted, the Houston Texans have not been around as long as the Dallas Cowboys. But I don't know. I personally don't know many Texan fans outside of, like, East Texas and the Houston area. Seems like Cowboys, and maybe just for longevity's sake, being that the Cowboys have been around so long, but it seems like Cowboys is the Texas team, and then Houston's are like trying to encroach on the territory.
Wait, I'm trying to figure out. Okay, I do believe I'm not a big football fan. Like, I'll root for Cowboys usually if I'm at a game thing that they're playing. But I'm more of a fan of players, if that makes sense. Like, I think of them as celebrities or, like, cast members. I don't know. This sounds so, like, this is how a nerd understands football. But sports people aren't on teams for me. They're just all, like, cast members in a big movie called football. And I find whoever I find interesting. So I believe there was he played for the Texans. Yeah, he did. J.J. Watts, I'm a big J.J. Watts fan as like a human being or as a cast member in the show movie Football. I really like him. So that's kind of the only Texan player I know. So that's who I'd root for if I was going with the guys.
Yeah, it looks like here Cowboys probably had a close to a 40-year head start on the Texans because Cowboys were founded in 1960, it looks like, and the Texans, I didn't realize it was this recent. It was founded in 1999.
Oh, wow. That is not that long. I mean, I bet for some people that's like forever ago, but like it doesn't feel long for me.
Though, one thing worth noting, there used to be the Houston Oilers, which existed from 1960 to 1996. So technically, Houston always had a team except for maybe that 3-4 year gap. And then the Texans came and took over. So it looks like the Oilers became the Tennessee Titans. And then at some point they're like, oh, we've ran out of, we need another team. And somebody's like, let's start the Texans.
I approve.
I'm not a big sports person, but reading Wikipedia, that's apparently what it is. So we go back to the Hill House and Hank comes and he's like, Peggy, where's that list of ATMs in Houston? I'm going to go to Houston and spend the weekend watching the Texans train. And Peggy's like, what? I ordered the chef's table at That's Amore this weekend. It's like the most romantic thing. It took 2 months to get in there. I even had to promote an illiterate student to the 9th grade because their father was a meat delivery driver for That's Amore. And Hank thinks it's dumb. It's like, oh yeah, let's eat dinner in the kitchen. Why don't we have dessert in the bathroom? And Peggy is upset, not so much that Hank isn't on board with it, but just the fact that Hank doesn't consult Peggy with doing things. While Peggy will always consult Hank, but then Hank just kind of does stuff and says, this is what's happening. And Hank is just being kind of obtuse. And he's like, okay, Peggy, I'm going to go ahead and tell you everything. Peggy, I'm going to go up and get a drink of water. Peggy, I'm going to go. You know, he kind of goes like that. And Peggy's like, well, maybe I should just take Bobby to the dinner. And Bobby squeals like he's excited. It's like, Bobby, you're not going. And he's like, oh. In the Hill bathroom, Hank apologizes, but kind of. He's like, yeah, I was thinking about what you were saying. And I'm sorry that, yeah, I made a decision without you. So I bought you a jersey and you can come with us to the Houston football training. And she's not really that happy, but I was like, oh, so you decided what team I'm going to cheer for. I bet you even wrote me a cheer too. And Hank's like, no. And we see him reach backwards and crunch up a piece of paper that he had. So Peggy's upset because, you know, Hank really hasn't changed. He's just like, instead of consulting her on what we should do, he's just like, we're going to do it, but I'm going to include you, which, you know, I guess is a step in the right direction, but still isn't quite there. And I get where Peggy's upset. Like, I would be upset too.
Yeah, it's very understandable. Like, Hank not... You can really see, like, Hank isn't hearing what Peggy wants to do or what Peggy has planned to do for, it seems like, a while now. What'd you say? It took 2 months to get those reservations?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I do like... Oh, wait, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, go ahead.
I do like that he was trying to include her in the Houston trip. You know, I bet, like, I mean, I guess it would just be her and Nancy. They're like the only two females in that circle of friends, because Bill doesn't have anyone, neither does Boomhauer. But I like he's trying to include her, but that's not the point, right?
Yeah, the point's more that he doesn't consult her on anything. He just kind of says this is what's happening. And yeah, Peggy's upset. She leaves. She's like, hey, Bobby, your father has a new shirt for you. And Bobby's like, really? And then Hank's like, no. And now he's upset. So, man, two disappointments. In the alley, you know, Hank's like, oh, Peggy won't let me go to Houston. And Bill's kind of happy because he thinks that this means, oh, trouble in paradise. Maybe I've got an in with Peggy now. And then Dale's like, well, as the only happily married person here, let me recommend Dr. Tim Rast. You know, Tim Rast will make your wedding last. I came up with that catchphrase while Nancy was blabbering on about something, which is funny. But Hank's upset that Dale's going to see a couples counselor. We've established in an earlier episode that how Hank feels about mental health and therapists and all that. So this upsets him, but Dale's like, oh, it's great. He always takes your side. You know, I just go and say whatever, no matter how ridiculous it is. And he just nods. You know, he knows who signs Nancy's name on his checks. and then Hank's like, oh, this might be a good idea. He could tell Peggy that she's wrong. And then I could go to Houston. In the Hill bedroom, Hank says he wants to go to a relationship counselor. And Peggy is surprised because this is out of character for Hank. And he's like, no, I need to go and see this doctor, like Dale and Nancy, and you know, just let it all hang out in a safe environment and stuff. And You know, that's, and Peggy's like, oh, well, I'm glad. I'll go ahead and call this doctor. And Hank's like, oh, it's all right. I already set an appointment for Friday at 4:30. And Peggy's like, oh, so you set an appointment without consulting me. Well, I guess we have something to talk about. At the therapy session, first we kind of see Dale's therapy session, or I guess the Gribble's therapy session, since Nancy's there too. You know, she's like, oh, it's not just the nicotine-stained elbows and the fact that he won't admit that he's going bald, but he also cries during sex. And then the doctor's like, well, crying could be good. And Dale's like, thank you. And then he's like, the doctor says, all right, I'm going to draw you a treasure map. And anytime you think that there's something good out there, remember, you have a treasure here. And it's a symbolic thing. It's just like a generic picture of a house that like a 5-year-old would draw, and then like an X in there, and then it says Gribble's home. So it's basically him saying, oh, you know, your home is where all of the happiness is. But Dale thinks it's a real one, and he jumps, and he's like, give it to me! And then he runs outside, he sees the hills, and proceeds to try to swallow the map so that the hills can't steal it.
I love how Dale is kind of really bored during the therapy session. He's like slunked back. Nancy's really trying to engage with the therapist. And then the therapist's like, let me draw you a map. And then suddenly Dale is like perks up, and he's really into it. He's like, "Let me, what is this map? Where is it going to?" And like you said, it is a very like basic map to their house. I just really enjoy that. Like, Dale always thinks that there's something happening, even though when there's like nothing really happening. And I don't know, crying during sex, that's really a tough hurdle to go over. So God bless Nancy.
Yeah. Well, at least she's trying to make it work. It's a Hill's turn now, and Peggy sits down, and in a very Peggy Hill way, she's like, I've solved all the family's problems up to now, so I hope you don't mind. I'll be taking my own notes. And so the therapist takes notes, and Peggy takes notes, and Hank's like, here's the deal. Peggy wants to go and eat in the restaurant kitchen. I know, it sounds dumb, and I want to go see the Texans train. I await your verdict. So it's kind of funny, because it shows that he kind of thinks that this therapy is like an arbitration or something, or a mediation, but it's slanted in front of Hank. And then, you know, Peggy's like, it's more than just the Texans. We never do anything together. Like, we don't have scented soaps, and we didn't take the classes together. And Hank is just so controlling. And then Dr. Rass is like, Hank, I want you to see the Texans and forget about Peggy. And Hank is happy, because he's like, all right, I won. And then all of a sudden, you know, the doctor's like, see, it sounds bad when it's said out loud, does it? So now we're going to play a game I call Magic Wand. And Hank's upset. He's like, oh, I've been misinformed. I want to get out of here. And Peggy's like, no, this was your idea in the first place. And so I guess Magic Wand is like, oh, if you have a magic wand, what would you change about your partner? And Hank's like, oh, I think Peggy's perfect the way she is. And Peggy's like, oh, you're not doing this right. Give it to me. And doctor's like, sounds like we have an issue of control. Let's play a game called Time Machine. Let's picture the future when you're not working, you're retired, you have no kids. What do you see yourself doing? And they're like, oh, you already have a plan. We have a direct deposit saved up to buy 2 motorcycles. We're going to see America minus California. We're going to collect spoons from local diners and meet waitresses and corrupt local sheriffs. And, you know, we're about halfway to our goal now. Or we're a little over halfway to our goal now. And he's like, I'm going to write you a prescription. And he writes him a prescription for 1 motorcycle. It's like, you should check your notes. We said that we only have enough money for 1. He's like, yes, but you can use that half money to buy something that you can share. Or you can use it to get more therapy. And next we see him at the Harley store, and they buy a new motorcycle.
I can't remember. But he's like, let's play Magic Wand. I learned this from, I want to say he said Cameron Diaz's.
I thought he said Farrah Fawcett.
Oh, was it Farrah Fawcett? Maybe it was Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
I just love, as soon as he says that, Hank's like, oh my God. Like, that's when he's like, I've been misled or misinformed.
I mean, that's who Hank is. Hank thought this would be like a mediation, and the doctor would just immediately take Hank's side and be like, yeah, you should let him go to do the thing. What are you doing, Peggy? This is, you know, Hank wants to do it. Leave him alone. But that's not how it played out at all.
Also, he's voiced by Jamie Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Which, a name I haven't heard in forever.
I know. Well, as a big Scream fan, I'm always thinking about Jamie Kennedy. But, man, what a turn his career has. Well, I don't know. I actually don't know what he's up to right now. I hope it's good. I hope he's, like, living off of that Jamie Kennedy money. He was everywhere back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, he had like a punked-like show, but I don't... It was... What was it called? It was called the Jamie Kennedy Experiment. And I think he made... He tricked like just regular folk, whereas punked was like pranks on celebrities. But it was funny. I think what was... What killed his career? He was in like the sequel to The Mask. What was it? The Son of a Mask? And I think that's what ultimately killed his career.
Oh man, that killed his career. Do you remember that movie, Malibu's Most Wanted?
Yeah, I saw it many times in theaters. Believe it or not,
in theaters,
it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. Yeah, I saw it like two or three times because I was in high school when it came out. I saw it maybe two or three times in theaters.
Oh man, you're paying his mortgage now. Probably that's the money, but. I don't know. Back in the day, I thought Jamie Kennedy was going to be there forever.
Yeah. Well, most celebrities have their heyday and they just vanish. Like, speaking about the 90s, you remember Tom Green, how big he was, and now we haven't heard from him in God knows how long.
Oh, yeah. I just remember Tom Green's that song. What is it? Like, My Bum? Is it called The Bum Song?
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
I just remember... it's called The Bum Bum Song.
Yeah.
I just remember that The Bum Bum Song became so popular, and it was like number one on TRL, like all the time. And they had to retire it because, like... Normal artists were getting really upset that Tom Green song was number one all the time.
Yeah. He was huge in the mid to late 90s. And now you don't hear about him anywhere. Like, I don't think I can even think about the last major project he was in. I think he's done like a lot of direct to video stuff or direct to streaming stuff, but he hasn't been in any major blockbusters and, probably 20 years.
I'm just looking up Tom Green stuff. Oh, he was in Road Trip, but that's early. That was 2000. So
yeah, I think that might have been his last big thing before. Oh no, he was in Charlie's Angels, but he was very like he wasn't a major role. That was like when he was dating Drew Barrymore, and they were married for what, a year or something like that.
What, they were married? Oh.
Yeah, he was married to Drew Barrymore for like a year. Oh yeah, so we're back at the Hill House, and Bobby's excited because he's like, "I can't believe you got a motorcycle. You're gonna be just like Evel Knievel, who had a motorcycle and a cape and a jeweled walking stick." And Hank's like, "That wasn't a jeweled walking stick. It was a cane because he had a crushed pelvis." And Bobby's like, "And a cape." Dale's reading the treasure map, or he's trying to, and he's like, "I can't read it because it's all smudged and everything because of the saliva in his mouth." And he's like, "I can't read through all the spit." And Bill's like, "Oh, I'm just glad to be with you." And Bill's got a shovel, and he is blindfolded, and he's like, "You don't have to blindfold me. I'm just happy to hang out. Like, I'm not going to steal the treasure." And he's like, "I know. That's why I didn't gag you." In the alley, you know, Peggy's like, "Hey, Hank, let's get ready to ride." And Hank's like, "Yeah, riding this motorcycle was the right move. We didn't need therapy. You know, when we go to the hardware store, Peggy gets to give me a 20-minute hug, and I get to go to the hardware store," which is a real, I guess that's, Hank's definitely not an emotional person, so I can see him saying that. They go to the Harley store to buy some more leather or whatever, and they see a real biker couple. And you're like, "Oh, let's make out. Or your stuff cleared up, right?" And so they do. And Hank's looking around. It's like, "Oh, look, this is a wallet with a chain on it. This is like so you don't lose it when you get in a rumble." And they see Lumpy and Pepperoni Sue. That's the name of the bikers. And they're registering at Harley for their wedding. and they're like, oh, it looks like you're getting married. It's like, oh no, we're renewing our vows. We got married 10 years ago. It's like, yeah, last time I just got assless chaps and a tequila. And it's like, yeah, but it got us through five states. We're doing our recommitment at Sturgis, where they have the real life annual bike week, which is a big deal. Like, what is it? 80,000 people, something like that. It's like, yep, we're going to spend our wedding night under the same foosball table in the same bar. And they wind up inviting Peggy and Hank to come and visit. And they're like, yeah, why not? Let's go. We've been thinking about doing stuff with other biker couples. At the Hill House, Peggy's like, I'm off to the store for the motorcycle, while Hank's looking up, like, I guess, AAA brochures about South Dakota. And Peggy's just riding. Like, it's clear she took the long way around because she's driving through like farmland and rural Texas and whatever. And she's like, oh man, now they're in the garage, and she's like, oh, if I have bugs in my teeth, it's because I couldn't stop smiling. It's like, oh, I want to start it up. I don't want to wake up Bobby. Oh, who cares? He gets enough sleep and they rev it up. So it's nice to see that they're all so excited about the motorcycle. I do love Lumpy and Pepperoni Sue. They are biking couples, but they are nothing like Hank and Peggy. They are like the anti-Hank and Peggy.
If I ever have a daughter, definitely Pepperoni Sue is the name. Or Lumpy. I mean, Lumpy feels unisex.
Yeah. It is. I think it could be. Yeah, because they're like, maybe trashy is not the word I want to use, but they're definitely not Hank and Peggy, where Hank and Peggy are, you know, Peggy, it gets loose every now and again and stuff, or loosens up every now and again. But Hank is like super straight laced. So the idea of, oh, we're going to register at the Harley dealership, or it looks like they're also registered at the liquor store. That's something Hank wouldn't do. Hank would probably be registered at like Strickland Propane or a hardware store or something like that. Something practical. And having a wedding night under a foosball table. But, you know, I guess they're just like, hey, we're real. I guess it's one of those things where like, hey, we're real bikers. We need to hang out with real bikers. So that's why they're going along with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for them, it looks like Lumpy and Pepperoni Sue are having like this really idyllic marriage, you know? Like, they're both free, uh-huh, and they both are so in love with each other. It's been 10 years. Yeah. And renewing their vows. That's something like Hank would never think of wanting to do, a vow renewal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just getting through the original wedding was a task enough, mm-hmm, for him. We see Dale and Bill digging into the evening, or into the night rather. Well, really it's just Bill digging while Dale makes him do all the stuff, and they come across the box and Dale jumps in the hole and opens it. He's like, oh, it's a mummified house cat. It must have belonged to the Pharaoh, and it still has its collar on. So Bill's like, Mr. Boots, isn't that your old cat? Dale's like, no, it can't be. My cat was fluffy and full of life, and this one is all stiff and everything. And then he kind of has the realization. He's like, Nancy told me he ran away. The Hills are just having a dream while they're sleeping, and they're just saying potato, 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 which, to those people who don't know, that is supposedly how you tell a real Harley from a knockoff or whatever, because a Harley, when idling, goes potato, 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 or at least that's what it sounds like. So, lesson for the day, I guess, for those who didn't know. I feel like that's probably also just common knowledge, maybe, but I don't know.
I did not know, but now I know. You've taught me.
Mm-hmm. They're getting ready to bounce the next day, and Bobby is staying with Cotton, and they're like, okay, so be good for your grandpa, Cotton. And Bobby's like, fine, but no bath pics with good Hank. It's just embarrassing, which makes sense. I mean, what, there's got to be a good 12-year difference between them, so why are they even bathing together? But so they take off, and they're doing the long haul. Obviously, they're going from Texas all the way to South Dakota, and every state they stop in, Peggy's like, okay, now it's time to switch, but Hank doesn't want to. So like they go to Oklahoma and he's like, oh, I'm still feeling great. And then they're in Kansas, like, oh, I wouldn't want you to miss all of that wheat. We can change to the next state. Then they get to Nebraska and he's like, oh, you know what? I'm still feeling pretty fine. Thanks. And then they make it to South Dakota. And he's like, oh, we've made it this far. Why mess with progress? And Peggy is getting more and more mad. And then they get to a sign that says Sturgis is like 2 miles away. And Peggy's like, okay, let me ride the last 2 miles. And Hank's like, oh, but you know, I told you we'll throw off the weight distribution. And, you know, that would be a great picture for the corridor to take after our bodies bounce off of the asphalt. And Peggy's like, you know, that's bunk. I want to ride the motorcycle. And Hank's like, okay, but, you know, that's not really where men are supposed to sit. Like, women are supposed to sit in the back. Like, in fact, the back of this motorcycle seat is called the bitch seat. And she's like, does that mean I'm here? He's like, no, I don't even think it's spelled the same way. Forget about it. So they're getting ready to go to Sturgis, and Peggy jumps on the back, but she's mad because now she realizes, oh, Hank is being controlling again. And it's like, well, now we can go tell Dr. Rast about this. And I can tell him that, you know, you ruined my vacation. Or hey, wait, let me get a shirt that says my husband ruined my vacation and all I got was this lousy shirt. And then Hank was like, well, let's get a motorcycle with 3 seats. That way Dr. Rast can join us. And then Hank takes off, but Peggy's not holding on to Hank. So as he takes off, she rolls downhill. And now, of course, she's mad. So, yeah, Hank is definitely controlling. And, yeah, I guess he's just like, that's kind of the inferior position to be in the back seat of a motorcycle. So that's why he wants to be on the front. But also, like, there's no way they made that ride in one run. There is no way they started midday in Texas and then drove through the night and got to South Dakota. I mean, it's possible, but not likely. They stopped at a hotel. Why didn't they just switch then?
Yeah, this is definitely a couple day trip. At least to get out of Texas, you gotta go a full day. Well, now I don't know. They're pretty close to Dallas, right?
Yeah. So they probably could have got through Oklahoma and Kansas in one sitting, but there's no way they would have gotten all the way to South Dakota in like a day.
I don't know. Now I feel like I'm getting the logistics of this, but like, I've never ridden a motorcycle as well, but like, if you're new to riding a motorcycle, wouldn't it be very like uncomfortable to go that far? And like,
no, even if you're a longtime rider, you can't do it like in a quick stretch like that. It would be super uncomfortable at some point.
I mean,
point,
just like in a day, a break. Like even like,
yeah,
from like Arlen to Oklahoma, like, wouldn't you be like, okay, my body's kind of like. Also, Hank has, like, what is it, the flat butt?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I do feel like there were moments that they wanted the opportunity to switch drivers, but, you know, Hank can't sit in the, you know, the female dog seat.
Yes. Yes, we're trying to be kids friendly. That's just what they called in the actual show. Yeah. So, they're definitely... There's definitely tension there, and I think Hank probably has some lingering beliefs left over from maybe what he learned from his dad, where he believes that, like, I'm the father, or I'm the man of the house, and so I, you know, what I say goes kind of thing, and I'm supposed to be in charge, and yeah, that's, I think that's where this is coming in, whereas Peggy just, I think, like, normally we give Peggy crap, but this time I'm actually going to agree with her. She just wants to be an equal to Hank and wants to equally enjoy this motorcycle and equally have a say in things and not just have Hank shut everything down.
Yeah, Hank is painted very, very badly in this episode so far.
Yep. They literally walk 2 miles to the Sturgis rally because they can't agree on who will ride and whatnot. And they're each holding one side of the bike and one of the handles as they're walking the bike. And as Hank walks in, he notices like a bunch of women are flashing. And naturally, Hank, being as prudish as he is, he's uncomfortable and he looks away. And Peggy's like, that's right. Get a good look because you won't be seeing mine anytime soon. And Hank's like, oh, I'm glad to hear that you're getting vulgar now. And Peggy hits the brake lever and he's like, why? You can't just stop the bike. He's like, why? The brake's on my side and I want to stop the bike. He's like, fine, we'll just park here. And Peggy's like, I'm going to go to the Greyhound station and get a ticket. They'll let me sit anywhere I want. And Hank's like, they won't let you sit in the driver's seat. You can't even talk to him. And as Peggy walks away, she gets angry. She lifts up her shirt and flashes the guys. And Hank's like, oh, my goodness. And then she's like, relax. I'm wearing a bra. As she walks away, there's a motorized bar stool race. And one of the guys bumps into Hank and his glasses fall off. And then another guy comes by and runs over his glasses and just destroys them. At the Arlen Counseling Center, we kind of follow the B story. And there's another couple that I don't think have ever been named or we've ever seen in the other episode. And Dr. Rast is doing the same thing where he's like, hey, here's a map to where you can find a lot of treasures. And then Dale just jumps out of nowhere and steals the map. And then he's like, and you stop playing the blame game and leaves. So it's just kind of funny that Dale was apparently hiding in the counselor's room, which is probably a huge HIPAA violation. And he just steals the map. And then he's also like paying attention the whole time because he's like, stop playing the blame game.
Dale's actually would be a great spy. You know, like for as crazy as he is, he does kind of like find ways to hide things. And then he did build a tunnel under Hank's house at one episode.
That's true. Built it poorly, though.
Oh, yeah. Very unstructurally. If Hank was involved, it would have been a really nice tunnel.
Probably. Though he probably wouldn't have done it either because it would have been out of... it would have not been... Yeah. So he goes to the... Hank goes to the jewelers in Sturgis and he's like, are these fixable? He puts like the glasses pieces on the ground and on the... he puts his glasses on the... counter, and the guy just kind of looks at it for a second. It's like, no. And then he overhears Pepperoni Sue saying, yeah, what size is that nipple ring come in? And, you know, Hank recognizes. So he's like, Pepperoni Sue. And then Lumpy gets concerned and he's like, he goes into his jacket to pull out a knife and he's like, oh, it's just you. I was about to mess you up. It's like, yeah. Pepperoni Sue's like, yeah, it's that old biker dude who had the crazy girlfriend. Where is she at? So Hank's like, oh, we're not speaking yet. You know, Peggy wanted to ride on the front of the bike. And Lumpy was like, I'd rather be shanked than let my lady ride on the front. It's like, she knows her place. And he's like, you know, petting her. It's like, you know your place, don't you? Yes, you do. And Hank's kind of uncomfortable with, like, the dynamic of the relationship. One, that they're so open and affectionate in terms of, like, kissing and making out. But then also just the whole... puppy thing, I guess you could say, like, oh, yes you do. And Hank looks at it, it's like, oh, you look like you licked a bad pickle. And Lumpy's like, why don't you show him your girls? He's like, okay, but they might still be chapped for a ride. And Hank's like, oh, no thank you. Hank walks to the bus station with the bike and sees Peggy waiting. Peggy's like, wear your glasses, or did you think it was too effeminate for men to wear glasses? It's like, no, they got broken. Here, take the bike, I'll take a bike home. And Peggy's like, this is ridiculous. I'll just ride the bike back for us. And Hank's like, oh, don't want to ride on that. And Peggy calls him a baby. He's like, I'm not a baby. He sat on the bike and he's not really comfortable with it. So he just puts his hands on Peggy's shoulders and she drives away. And on the way back home, Peggy's like, aren't your arms getting stiff? And he's like, yeah, I guess I could move them down here. And so he kind of puts it on Peggy's side, not like wrapped around her, but he puts his hands on Peggy's side. And then as Peggy's riding, she's like, oh, snake. And she dodges a snake in the road. And Hank's like, great maneuvering. And so now Hank's feeling more comfortable. And he's actually like holding Peggy on the bike. And as they're driving, she's like, oh, my goodness. Look, there's a moose at the lake. He's like, there's a moose and a lake? He's like, oh, yes, it's great. The horns are beautiful. Let me get you closer. And they divert over so that they can get closer and Hank can see. And he's like, it's beautiful. I love you, Peggy. And she's like, sandwiches? I think there's some in the bag. And then we have the end montage that kind of shows pictures of their trips and the spoons that they collected and Peggy at Four Corners and stuff. And then it shows a picture of Bobby in the bath with Good Hank, GH, and it ends. So I'm glad that Hank came around. I'm sad that it took all of that, like of him losing his glasses and stuff for him to like get to that point. But, you know, I guess it's better than nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I really wish Hank would have came around on his own, but it is nice that they got to have that ride together, even though it was forced because Hank couldn't drive the bike. But Peggy's a great motorcyclist, you know? I wonder if they took classes. I always am like wondering the backstory of episodes. Like, did they take a, like, I know you got to have a special license, but like, she was driving really well for someone who didn't get to drive the whole time.
Yeah, we don't see how much time passed. And it's also possible that they've always had a motorcycle license. They just never really got to use it because they didn't have a motorcycle. I've had a few friends like that in the past who got a motorcycle license under the assumption that at some point they were going to buy a motorcycle, and they just never got around to it. So maybe that was it, because it's like, how much time passed for them to get their motorcycle license? Granted, I'm sure they can get it the same day, maybe. Like, well, DMVs being what they are, maybe not the same day. But if they went early enough, they could probably get it the same week that they bought the motorcycle. But who knows? But yeah, Piggy did handle the motorcycle really well, which is nice. You don't hear about that too often.
Yeah, it was really great. Like, and she went off-road down that trail, so that was pretty cool. I hope she met some corrupt cops on her trip. That was one of her goals, to meet interesting waitresses and corrupt police officials.
Yeah, it is. It's funny that she specifically calls that out as something she wants to look at. Like, I get it. Like, you know, small towns tend to probably have less oversight, so there's probably a lot of corrupt police, but just to specifically call it out, like, oh, I can't wait to run into some corrupt local sheriffs.
Yeah, I love that they got the spoons. And you know what? Bobby knew he was going to end up in the bathtub. He just knew it.
Who does that, though? Like, I think everybody, if you have a sibling, you do that thing where you take a bath together. But usually it's like, there's a 2-year age gap and you're like 1 and 3 or something like that. There's like, Bobby's 13 and good Hank has to be at best 1 year old. Like, who would do that? I would fight, like, not fight. Like, I wouldn't physically fight, but I would not let, if it were me, I would not let that happen. I also wouldn't let them take a picture.
Gosh. I mean, you know, it was Cotton's idea, right? Cause Dee Dee doesn't care.
Yep, that's all I have on this episode. So join us next week as we do Hank's Back, which is a early season episode. Until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.